car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, welcome again. This is The Thing About Cars, recording as always in Strongbox West in Atlanta. Around the table we have
Becca,
Ronnie,
Ben,
and I'm Mickey. We're just going to jump right into our agenda today. The first thing I think we want to talk about is a question that our friend Mike asked on Facebook. He says he wants to buy a car. And let me find the relevant thing, the details here. Mike wants to buy a car. He says, I have $17,000 to $18,000 to spend. He's looking for an all-wheel drive V6 smaller SUV with fewer than 50,000 miles. He says, what are your thoughts? Do you think the Touareg or the Countryman fits the bill? Or are there better choices like the Lexus RX 350? That's the first question.
First of all, Touareg, no. I thought that they were cute at first, too, and I've had several friends give them a try, and just abysmal problems. Yeah. I don't know if all my friends are just unlucky. Maybe it's that they all know me. I don't know. I've heard nothing but terrible things, yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, it was kind of cute when it came out.
I would back that up. I had a GTI and a Golf, two VWs from about the same era, and yeah, they're great for the first handful of years. Then they become decrepit POSs.
Yeah, and the Countryman, when I was recently looking for a third vehicle to my little menagerie, I had played around with the notion of the Countryman, even though I hate the dashboards in minis. And while they were still cute, they were still appealing, I could not find one for a decent price. So I would say that they're definitely higher in the price market. It depends on what you want in it. And what's available out there. But I'm going to put a strange caveat next to my what's the word I'm going for?
Your statement.
No, not my statement. I'm thinking of suggesting the Ford Edge. And I know, as long as you don't have small children, though, because the one that I had, there was an issue with the cabin airflow. People in the back seat wouldn't be cooled enough. But for the V6 engine, it was decently peppy, all-wheel drive, lower price, smaller of the crossovers, and even if you don't like feeling the up-highness of SUVs, things like that, you can actually lower them, not crazy, but without a tremendous amount of difficulty, so you both have the SUV, but don't feel like you're bobbling around up too high, unless you want to take it off-road. So I'm not saying, I mean, it's a Ford. There may or may not be issues. That was really my only issue was, the capability of the HVAC, but it's worth looking at.
Ronnie?
So if you're a recurring listener, you know my criticisms of European vehicles in general. The Touareg I would not recommend because Volkswagen in general just does not have a good long lifespan. And I should...
That is so sad to say. They used to be just...
Yeah. They used to be bulletproof.
Yeah.
But the problem is there's so much technology and cost versus expense it doesn't add up.
That's the VW Crusher you're hearing in the background.
Yeah. sorry, folks. There's someone cleaning floors outside.
yes.
But anyway... Volkswagen just doesn't have the reliability factor that it used to have.
Right.
And I think that is actually uniquely an American thing. Being on a variety of forums and boards internationally, people are very pleased with their Volkswagens. In countries like South Africa and parts of Europe and other places as well, I think parts of India even, people are very satisfied with their Volkswagens. However, here in America, for some reason, they just don't have good sustainability. I think it has to do with the uniqueness of the driving environment that America has. I don't think there's anywhere else in the world where driving 30 to 45 minutes one way to a destination is regarded as normal. And that's 30 to 45 minutes of 40 miles of driving. 30 to 45 minutes in London gets you like 2 kilometers.
Yeah.
But here, it's destructive. Also, our grades of fuel and our general environmental condition isn't exactly as pleasant as other countries are. Also, we are a country that is much about abundance. So everyone has a car here.
Sure.
Where in places like South Africa or England, there's great public transportation where most people don't have to worry about that. So anyway, that was a bit of a tangent. So no to the Touareg. I am not a fan of Mini Coopers at all. I think they're weird. I think most of the followers or owners of Mini Coopers are in a cult. And I say that with affection, I guess. But they do have good resale value, but I don't agree with their reliability. The other options would be something along the lines of a Jeep, which I'm also not a fan of, because I think they have poor reliability, and I'm actually working on several right now for a movie that I can't speak of in terms of what that movie is. And they're giving us abysmal problems. They're just falling apart left and right.
Jeeps?
I'll take one of those off your hands.
Unfortunately, we're not allowed to do that.
I'm loving my Jeep. I know I couldn't get the Wrangler like I wanted. Wait.
Okay, so Mike's question, my first thought was, he's looking for an all-wheel drive V6 smaller SUV. My first thought was, Honda and Toyota don't do V6s in their smaller SUVs, do they?
They do. I think it's a rare option.
And like a RAV4 or CRV, CRH, or whatever.
I think the new CRVs may come in a 6, or they have the option of a 6. New CRVs, the Lexus RX350, absolutely.
He did mention a Lexus, didn't he?
He did. He put the RX350 on his list.
Love the RX350. It is this amazingly super futuristic cabin that's very accommodating. If you're not afraid of technology, it envelops you and gives you this warmth that...
Sounds like money.
Yes.
Yes, but the reliability factor is actually pretty fantastic. And on top of that, I've spoken on another segment of looking at the resale value of vehicles. So if you have $17,000 to $18,000 to spend, look at the trends of the vehicles that you're looking to purchase. So if a vehicle was originally $30,000 and say it's a three-year-old vehicle and now it's selling for $15,000 to $17,000, something's probably pretty wrong with the vehicle. If it was a $20,000 vehicle in 2015, when it was brand new, and now it's selling for $15,000 to $17,000, you can bank on it being a pretty solid car.
Right.
Lexus would do that. Toyota would do that. Honda would do that. I would also recommend don't be so married to the V6 concept. Four cylinders have come a long way.
Yes, they have.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of what power common drivers would seek is actually hidden in the gearing. So the transmission works for you to bring out what is actually less power in the engine, converts to more speed on the road. So that's what we call shorter gearing. You can use, 170 horsepower and it'll feel like 240 horsepower from a car that came from, 1994, let's say.
That's the magic of these 88-speed automatics they're making now.
Right.
They've got a gear for everything you need.
Yeah.
Well, Mike asks a related question. He says, somewhat related, reliability is a big issue for most buyers, but how much difference is there between, say, a Toyota versus an Audi versus a VW versus a Mini Cooper?
Oh, my goodness. That could be 2 or 3 podcasts.
I think you're right. I think there's quite a bit to say, but I think it's easy to sum it up, and that is to say that the Audi, the VW, the Mini Cooper don't have the reliability ratings that Toyota or Honda are going to have.
I would agree with that.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and this is speaking as, a professional mechanic. I can stay in business because of those European vehicles.
Actually, yeah, I know a number of people that would make that same kind of comment. And, Eric, who has visited us, he only works on European vehicles, and they are always, literally, there's never parking spots for visitors.
Sure.
There is so much going on, and they have more saying, can I get in, because their cars are just breaking. Although, on a side note, bad on me for not mentioning this before a Ford, since, I gave up my Ford Edge. The Liberty I have, I know the perception of it, but it's been a great thing. It's really been putting up with my BS, because I drive it like a race car driver, which works fine in the Pontiac when it works in the Mustang. I've gotten yelled at for, this is a Jeep, you can't drive like that. It's been totally keeping up with my paces. And I bought it with 120,000 miles on it.
Right.
It's doing great. So I know it's not quite the Wrangler, which is what I had gone for, but it's, and I got mine for $5,000.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you do enough digging, and it's got the, it's not the AirQuest all-wheel drive. It is the part-time 4x4. So it's the trail-rated Jeep Liberty. Mm-hmm. So it's got the 4x4, the high, low, all of that, like with a regular Jeep or a Wrangler, I should say. V6, which is quite peppy. It says a lot coming from me because, you know, what I'm used to driving. So it's actually been a really good little car.
I would also say don't be too married to the concept of all-wheel drive unless you live in a snow state.
He does.
Oh, okay. Well, that, yeah. Yes, get an all-wheel drive. That's
or
fine.
Or it's more fun in Atlanta when we do actually have snow or ice to for just kind of, for those, you know, 3 days. Stick your tongue out at the people that are stuck and go, ha, ha.
For those 3 days that we actually have snow and ice in Atlanta.
It helped me one time. It allowed me to escape my husband and my children.
Those snow days. Most of the years that I had the GTI, I was living in Texas, and it's about like here in regards to snow.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, when you've got a peppy turbo sporty little hot hatchback with big wide sporty tires, take one of those out to a snowy parking lot, stick it in reverse, and do some WFO donuts. Oh yeah.
Just make sure you're lower down and not an SUV while doing that.
They're more fun in reverse than in first.
Let me introduce what I think will hope will become a recurring segment, and we're trying to experiment with recurring segments here. And I'm going to call this your moment of car trivia. It probably needs a better name.
Probably does.
Can we think of a better one?
I'm sure we could.
I challenge the listeners to think of a better one.
Please name this segment for us. It's going to be car trivia. We'll ask a question.
The thing about trivia.
We'll discuss a little bit, and then we'll divulge the answer later on in the show. So the question that I'm going to ask today is, this is a gimme. This is a very simple one for the first one ever. The question is, what was the first Japanese car to be produced in the U.S.?
To be produced in the U.S.
And the choices are, was it the Honda Accord, the Toyota Tercel, the Datsun B100, or the Mazda Miata? Let's think about that for a while, and when we finish the next topic, we'll come back to it and answer the question. Okay?
We're all pondering that now and not thinking about the next topic.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I know the answer.
Well, let's think about it.
Right.
Well, I'm going to jump into the next topic, which is I'm being scammed. I'm pretty sure I'm being scammed. Mickey is, in fact, being scammed. So I was looking around for cars. My good old-fashioned Mazda 6 is still running well. But after putting the new transmission in it, I keep looking at it, and I'm having a little more discontent with what I'm seeing, so I'm starting to look for options.
You're not in love anymore.
I'm not really in love with it anymore. I could be, but it just I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, I've got to change the headliner. That's $300. I've got to fix the bumper on my own. That's X number of hours plus another $300 or $400. That's, you know, the valve cover gaskets still need replacing. It's leaking oil like a sieve these days, and it smells like hell whenever I pull up to a red light just because oil is burning off the manifold. It needs some work. It needs a lot of work. And it's got 310,000 miles on it. So maybe I could get another Mazda 6 that has 150,000 miles on it, and hopefully it'll need less work for at least the next 2 or 3 years. Because I'm not trying to buy an expensive car that I'm going to hang on to for the next 5 to 10 years. I'm trying to buy a cheap car that I can hang on to for the next 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Right? So in my mind, that's a $2,000 to $5,000 car. And searching around Craigslist and eBay and the Facebook marketplace and wherever else I'm looking, I find a, let me read the thing to you. I find a, this very interesting car. It's a 2008 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited with 96,000 miles on it, and the buyer only wants $2,000 for it. It looks pristine in the pictures.
I'm again coming around to visit your picture.
Right. So this is just one little picture. It's not a good one.
That's a hell of a lot of depreciation, though. So,
okay, so it has the Hemi in it. It has the Hemi.
Ah.
So I said, what's up? Why are you selling this car on Craigslist? Yeah. And she says, well, it comes up as a Brookhaven address. And she says, well, I just got a divorce. I got the car in the settlement. I just want to get rid of it.
Oh, well, in that case.
So she says, you have to send me this information, your name, your address, your email address, and your eBay ID so that I can run the transaction through eBay, their certified payment things. That way, Mickey, you get a week to look at the car and decide if you really want it, and I get payment protection guarantees via eBay because that's what they offer sellers, and it's just safer for the two of us. So I'm like, look, I'm in Brookhaven right now because Jen lives a few miles away from Brookhaven. I said, if you really only want $2,000 for the car, I can hand you cash today. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, the truth is I'm in Richmond, Virginia, and would have to ship it to you out of my own pocket.
Mm.
I said, I said, well, I'm okay with that. Is it, I mean, if you really only want $2,000 for it, and I'm like, something's, at this point, my alarm bells start to go off.
She keeps saying the truth is, and that right there is. Uh-huh.
So get this. So I said, yeah, go ahead and send me the eBay invoice and I'll run the transaction. The eBay invoice shows up and it's screaming phishing attack, right? Yeah. It's screaming scam because instead of running a transaction through eBay or through PayPal, it says, let's do a Walmart to Walmart cash thing. And then the car will show up to you. Sure enough, if you go to eBay Motors and you look up information on transaction safety, it specifically mentions as Walmart not being an authorized way to do an eBay sale.
Right.
And so I wrote back to this lady who, I don't know if I should name her or not.
It might not even be her real name.
It's probably not her real name.
Yeah.
She says, Dora Tyler in Richmond, Virginia. And I said, this is a scam, isn't it? And she hasn't written back yet. So, so I think I'm being scammed. And for a second there, I'm like, what the heck? And, you know, do I stop looking for other cars because I'm going to get this real steal of a deal on a divorcee's Jeep that she doesn't want anymore? By the way, if there are any divorcees out there that don't want their cars, please call me.
So here's what you do. You find one of those that's wrecked or something.
Right.
Take the Hemi out and put it in your Mazda.
So.
Would there be room for that in the Mazda?
We can make room.
We can make room. Cut the firewall out.
Because if it were real, that's a decent car. But you know the old adjective.
Thing. If it's too good to be true. But I have run into those transactions before, mostly through people I've known who were moving out of state. And literally, twice in my lifetime, I have had friends say, Mickey, I'm leaving the state. I don't want this car. What do you give me for it? And I've gotten steals that way. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, maybe here's just another one. And this person just doesn't have a local friend to sell it to. And of course, yes, in fact, it is too good to be true. And it screams scam because it is a scam. And
yes.
I'm sorry about that. That's,
me too. It's very disappointing. It's let's see.
Yeah. You are being scammed.
I am.
That is the conclusion.
This will not be a recurring segment.
Right.
Ben, can you talk about oil viscosity in 4 minutes?
Let's see.
Maybe
less than that. This is a question that came from our good friend Tim through our Facebook. Tim says, my owner's manual recommends 5W30. Can I switch to 0W30 for better oil flow and fuel economy when the engine is cold? Hint, Mobile One guarantees their oil for full protection in this application. Of course, he did not tell us what kind of car it is.
Well, that would be helpful.
Yeah, that would probably make the difference to me.
Yeah.
Like if it's a really recent model hybrid or something. That requires thin oil, then that would make a difference.
A lot of things do now because the tolerances are just so fine now.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was thinking. He said the manual recommends 5W30.
Yeah.
So at least 2,000 or newer.
Yeah.
Gotta be.
But yeah, other than that, we really can't guess much from what he said.
My gut tells me he'll be perfectly okay and that it's really not going to make that much a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like oil viscosity is a big misnomer on,
Really?
Yeah, it's a bit of a, it's kind of like when people say, oh, I want to hot my car up, and then they go to change the spark plugs. Like,
right.
No, that's
maintenance. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, stickers, wings, you know, lights, all that kind of stuff. Oil viscosity, sure, it's important. I think the quality of oil is more important. So if you're using AutoZone's off-brand Peak, instead of Mobile One or what's a more reputable brand? Royal Purple, I feel like, is a little bit gimmicky.
Lucas
is actually more of an additive company. They don't actually provide a stable maintenance-based lubrication product.
They've got oil
softeners.
AMSOIL is good.
Yeah.
Lubrimoly is good. NAOS is great. I'm a big fan of Motul. A lot of these you can't get from your conventional stores. Castrol and Mobile One are the two that I swear by most cars. There are odd cars that work really well with Pennzoil.
Yep.
Typically, I'm not a fan of Pennzoil because I've heard caking stories, but I've only heard them, never seen them firsthand. But Mazda Miatas, for some reason, will only run well on Pennzoil.
I suspect it's also a regular maintenance thing, that it doesn't really matter as long as you're still changing your oil.
Correct.
According to schedule, it probably degrees and splitting hairs here don't matter.
Right.
So
we're talking about general driving. Right. We're not talking about race cars here. Sure, right. On turbo vehicles that race, that run extraordinarily high engine temperatures, you want thicker oils.
Yeah.
Because the oils thin out that much more. But if you're just making basic commuting, it wouldn't hurt to experiment, maybe, if that is something you want to pursue anyway. Do right. one oil change with 0-30, see what your mileage is, and then do the next oil change with 5-30, right. see what your mileage is.
Does he live in cold climate?
No, he's local to our area. I think he's up by Cumming somewhere.
Okay.
It's becoming cold. But when you say viscosity doesn't matter, obviously don't run out and put 10W-30 in your car that says put 5W-20.
Right,
I mean,
right.
you've still got to worry about your tolerances. Plus, if you have engine leaks going too thin, it's just going to allow it to
leak faster.
Right. So it really depends entirely on the car.
Yeah.
And it's only doesn't matter to most extent. Don't throw whatever you find in there.
Right.
What if they find a 40 weight out there and just go, that's cheap, you know?
The difference between the 5 and the 0, you know.
Right.
It's probably, as long as he's in the right ballpark, he's probably going
to
be fine.
Right. So we should say ballpark as opposed to whatever.
And don't go put like a 0 or a 5 in an old engine with flat tappets.
No.
Right.
Right. Well, yeah, it's a good thing to amend my statement. I'm not trying to say viscosity doesn't matter at
all.
Right,
right.
I think it's a matter of some people put too much importance on it.
And it goes back again to figuring out what kind of car he drives.
Right.
And how young it is.
Right.
Because if it's an older car, forget it. Stick with the heavy stuff.
Right. And that's another thing which, you know, there's really no theory proving it one way or another.
Yeah.
But there are people that will say that the higher mileage your vehicle is, the more your tolerances have opened up, the more the engine has worn down, and the thicker oil you can use. I'm not 100% sure that's a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think metals are really supposed to wear down like that. But
not like in the old days, at least.
Right.
But it depends on the car as to how it wears. It all goes back to what is the car.
The metallurgy has come a long way.
Right. So a common issue that Ferraris are actually experiencing on the 360s is the engines will blow up. You know, no big deal. That's what Italian cars do.
No big deal. How much did you pay for that Ferrari? Oh, no big deal. The engine blew up.
Well, $4 million hardware.
Well, the crummy thing is the new engines are $20,000 from Italy, and which sounds great. You know, whatever. You can buy a new engine still for a 360. You ship it in. However, the engines are full aluminum. If aluminum sits for too long in the wrong climates, the metallurgy starts to kind of deteriorate, and you buy a pretty much bad engine brand new.
Yep.
Because the metal sagged or something along those lines and tolerances fell out of spec.
Right.
So people have experienced brand new engines failing because they were just sitting for 20 years.
Forged steel, just saying.
Forged steel.
Side note, forged steel.
Forged everything.
All right. That's all we have time for today. Thanks as always for joining us. This is The Thing About Cars, recording in Strongbox West Atlanta. Find us at thethingaboutcars.com, and please support us via Patreon. We really appreciate you becoming part of the Thing About Cars family. We will be at the Italian Car Day happening in Norcross on March 2, and we still plan to be at the Summit Motorama happening down south of Atlanta in April. So, Ben.
Oh, one more thing. We forgot to follow up on that trivia question.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Oh, Ben's on the ball today.
Ben is on the ball today. You guys want to take guesses?
What were our options again? The first one, mass-produced in the United States.
The first Japanese car to be produced in the U.S. Was it the Honda Accord, the Toyota Tercel, the Datsun B100, or the Mazda Miata?
I'm going with the Accord.
He said it was a gimme, so my thought is not working well with it being a gimme. What are you thinking, Ronnie?
I'd say it's going to be the Datsun.
See, that's where I was leaning at, but I don't feel Datsun is a gimme.
That's certainly the oldest car of that bunch.
And most, or least heard of name nowadays, too. Right. But
for those that don't know, Datsun is formerly Nissan. Nissan is formerly Datsun.
Right.
Sorry.
Datsun became Nissan. Yeah. But Becca, you got a guess?
Well, that's what I was saying. I was leaning towards Datsun, but I didn't feel it was a gimme. I was kind of throwing that out. It was the only one I was coming back to.
The answer is, it's the Honda Accord.
Huh. Ben gets it. Yay.
In November of 1982, the first American-produced Honda Accord rolled off the assembly line at the Marysville Auto Plant in Ohio. That year, it became the best-selling Japanese car in the U.S., a title which it would hold for the next 15 years.
Is Ohio the new automotive place to be?
I don't know.
No.
Kia's down in Alabama and Mercedes is here now.
I thought that Datsun factory was based in Tennessee back then. But apparently not. It came straight from Japan.
Well, and I think it was a gimme because they did kind of tout it in their ads for many years.
Yeah, so. They did.
Maybe it was a month behind.
So if you have an item of car trivia you want us to put to the gang, please send it to us via personal note or an email to the aforementioned venues like our website or the Facebook page. Don't put it in the public so we can actually just stump our panel here and see if we can get the answers correctly. Of course, we're going to research everything. So thanks for your help. Thanks again for your participation and your friendship. We will see you guys soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.